right. All right, all right, so here we are. Living it day by day, you are a superstar. At least that's what she used to always say.
Hello, everyone, and welcome to this edition of OWW Radio. This is the official radio program of OnlineWorldOfWrestling.com. Each episode, OWW Radio will bring perspective to the WWE, TNA, and everything else making news in the world of professional wrestling. My name is David, and today I welcome wrestling star J.J. Cruz. The Beating Heart is one of the finest pro wrestlers on the East Coast, and I look forward to chatting about his career to date and where he still intends to go in the future. J.J. Cruz, welcome to OWW Radio.
How you doing? Thanks for having me.
You bet. Tell me how 2016 is treating you so far.
So far, it's treating me okay. As far as life is all right, and you know, wrestling business could be a little better. I'm still working. I'm still out there, and I haven't won as many matches as I'd like to, but still working hard, still training, and getting better.
Now, I've worked with you the past several years in the Delaware area. Is that the primary territory, JJ, that you work, or where else are you wrestling now?
I mainly just wrestle up north for Right Coast Pro. I wrestle for Dynamite Championship Wrestling and occasionally for 302 Pro Wrestling. And I do sound for Power Pro Wrestling from time to time. And I wrestle for United Wrestling Coalition out of Jersey. And that's about it. You know, I'm every other weekend or every weekend out there, but I'm not every weekend, every month guy, you know, out there working every town, so to speak.
Mm-hmm. JJ, where did you grow up?
Well, I grew up here in Delaware, and, you know, right out of town then. I graduated out of Middletown High, and I got into wrestling through Jim Kettner and his ECWA up in, at the time, it was in Newport. So that's how I got involved in the wrestling business.
But when you were growing up, did you have a circle of friends that watched pro wrestling, or how did you actually become a fan of this type of entertainment?
Man, I thought you were gonna ask me that, and I can remember back the earliest images of wrestling for me was like WrestleMania like 5 with, you know, Hulk Hogan and Macho Man Randy Savage. And my brothers always watched it, and then, you know, as you got older, I just kept watching it over and over again. And then you meet like a group of friends, like you just said, that had the same interests, and then we all just kinda got in the business together, you know. So it was pretty neat how my life directly involves wrestling, and I can correlate everything that happened to me in my life because of wrestling. So it's pretty powerful stuff.
It is powerful. I remember the very first time I went to a live event was in October of 1985 at the old Hershey Park Arena, and it was a taping of Saturday night's main event for WWF at the time. The minute the lights turned off and Special Delivery Jones walked to the ring for the opening match, I remember everything just sucked me in. The music, the lighting, the passion of the crowd, the athleticism. It's really something else, JJ, right? It kind of gets in your blood, and it's hard to explain.
Yeah, I remember we went to our first like Royal Rumble. It was in Philadelphia. Man, when I saw Triple H come out, I was like, wow, like that's like on another level. And I was like, you know, I loved wrestling as it was, but when I saw him come out, man, and like all the lights and he spit the water and the whole deal, I was like, well, that's pretty cool, man. You know, like that was a whole other level of cool. You know, I was going to independent shows before that, but I saw that, I was like, goodness, they're like a whole other atmosphere, you know. So I know what you mean. It gets in you.
It does. Now, my friends today still laugh because they remember when I was in eighth grade and on up, and now that I actually work in the business, they still remember me, that I had those dreams. What made you actually, though, JJ, decide to go to training? You said you had a group of friends that were kind of getting into it, but liking it on television is a whole different game. It's a lot different than what you've done, where you started training and made this part of your life. What made you actually decide you could do this?
Well, man, I went to my first ECWA event. It was a Super 8. It had Jeff and Matt Hardy on it, a couple other guys. But they had this guy named Jeff Peterson. And he was, like, real small, and he did the All-American Kick gimmick. And, man, I saw him. I thought to myself, man, if he can do it, then I can do it. And it was a couple of years later that I finally got to be able to ring crew for ECWA, and Jim let me kind of just hang out enough to kind of let me learn a bit, let me inside enough to learn what was going on, you know. So it was pretty cool that I kind of worked my way up, you know, in the ranks as far as, you know, starting on the ring crew and learning as I went, you know, match to match. It was a very tough and training environment, learning on the fly almost with Jim Kettner.
Mm-hmm. Were you always a good athlete growing up?
You know, I played sports. I played baseball and soccer. I never played football. I never wrestled in high school. I thought, you know, I probably should have, but I didn't. For some reason, man, we just always had kind of enough athletic ability to wrestle and enough charisma to kind of carry me through the stuff I didn't know. And that kind of it took me much later to kind of really hone in on fundamentals and kind of really cementing, you know, a physical training atmosphere and really not relying on being a character so much as really being trying to be a solid hand in the ring. So, I mean, we still continue to train every week, so mm-hmm. as much as we can.
Always constantly growing and learning. But specifically, where did you train? What was your training schedule? Was it once a week, a couple times a week?
Well, when I started with Jim Kettner back in my son was just born, so it was like 06 when we really started. And he didn't have a training school, so basically we would get there before shows, and he would have like an Ace Darling or someone get in the ring with us and kind of go over stuff. And then we would travel to, if there was a show in PA, we'd go to there and get in the ring, or we'd go all the way up to Massachusetts a lot, all the way up to Chaotic, and we would get in the ring with those guys. So it was never just like, hey, we're going to train Monday, Wednesday, Friday. It was like train once a month, you know what I mean, and learn as you go. It was really tough, and it was a hard way to go because you're always learning on the fly, and you're always, you know, experimenting with things and hope you get it right, you know. But you pick up every tidbit from every guy and try to put it together, mm-hmm. you know. And then we watched a lot of tape, so, like, we would wrestle, and then Jim would sit us down and be like, hey, you need to do this, this, that, and this is what you need to fix, and this is how you can make this better. And we would do that all for a few years, you know, until he finally sold the business.
Mm-hmm.
So
I've spent some time in wrestling schools and documenting some mm-hmm. of what wrestlers go through when they get into training. It's much more difficult than people have any idea, right, JJ?
Yeah.
Until they go for the first time. How did it go for you? Were there times along the way where you said, I don't think I can do this?
There were times where I didn't think I was good enough to do it, you know, and then you got to reevaluate yourself. You got to reevaluate your goals. If your goals are to be in WWE, then, you know, maybe you got to do something different. If your goal is just to be an independent wrestler, then that's okay. Then you can continue doing what you're doing. But, you know, once Jim sold the company, I got up with Dynamite Championship Wrestling through Chris Wilde, who introduced me to Zach Connor, who introduced me to Mark Haro. And then we started really, and that was more of the quote-unquote training school environment, Monday, Wednesday, Thursday, you know, 7 to 10, 7 to 11, and that was some sweating out, you know, hard knocks training, you know, and that was, and there was a time where I never thought that I couldn't do it, but, you know, I just always worked towards the next goal. I was very goal-oriented, still am, you know, and once I get to the next goal, there's always something else I need to do, and that's where I'm at right now.
You mentioned some real good wrestlers there, Zach Connor, Chris Wilde. Would you consider them among your mentors?
No, you know, they're a heck of a hand, and, you know, and Zach Brooks and Chris Wilde, and I learned a lot from those guys. But my mentors, as far as that, there's another level, and that's Jim Kettner and Mark Haro all day long. So those are the guys mm-hmm. I call my mentors. But have I learned stuff from them? Absolutely. The Chris Wilde and the Zach Connors and Blaine and all the guys I've been in the ring with, Bomboy and Corey Castle and all those guys, I've learned so much from, you know, and going back to the ECWA days, the Billy Bax and the Rob Beckos, and we can name drop all day of all the tidbits and all the pieces of knowledge that have gone into what I kind of put together that I do now. So, but mentor-wise is Jim Kettner and Mark Haro all day long. So I credit them with training.
How about historically, JJ, you know, looking back on YouTube or WWE Network, you know, using all those resources that are out there now, who do you go back and watch to try to learn from some of the greats of the past?
What I do now is, because everybody watches the Undertaker Triple H matches, or they'll watch Undertaker Shawn Michaels. You know, my favorite match of all time is Bret Hart versus Mr. Perfect, SummerSlam. You know, I've watched it about 1,000 times, probably called the whole thing. But when mm-hmm. I go back and watch stuff now, I watch the most obscure stuff and try to find something that no one else is doing or a spot that no one else is doing that they've done forgot about. And I haven't watched the Rick Martels or the Stunning and Steve Austins and, you know, Hollywood Blondes, and I try to turn that on, or Norman Smiley or somebody that's really obscure that they're doing that it wasn't overly the greatest of all time, you know, considered, you know, in the business, but man, they were such a solid hand, and watch how their footwork was, and watch how they put things together and how they thought, and that's what I look for now, more than anything. And look at the spot they did at 88, and I put that together today, and no one's seen it for 30 years, you know, so it's fresh and it's new, and you're really just stealing stuff from what somebody else did.
Yeah. Yeah, you know, you mentioned about WrestleMania 5. That's really my era there. I'm older than you are. And I went to WrestleManias 4 and 5 in New Jersey because I grew up in Pennsylvania. And, of course, the focal point of those WrestleManias were the mega powers with Hogan and Savage and Miss Elizabeth. And I think that people today, JJ, they may not quite understand how important Miss Elizabeth was back then because the storytelling was better, I believe, than it is today. Is that a fair criticism that the athletes today may be light years better and the matches may be more athletic, but we've given up a little bit of the storytelling itself to sacrifice for spot after spot after spot? Is that fair?
Yeah, that's a fair statement, but we have to also consider, well, you know, what they're being given, what they're told to do. So they might have the ability to do these things, but they don't get the chance to do them. You know, like the story they're doing now, like the New Day and the Wyatts, they might get into more of a storyline thing because they already wrestled already. You know what I mean? So they get that opportunity. But you're absolutely right because as a little kid, I even remember all that stuff. You know, when Hogan's holding Miss Elizabeth and then Savage is going nuts. You know, how many years ago was that? And that's an image that I still keep. I agree that they could do more, but back in the 80s, that was okay to do. But today, and today's standards and today's kids and guys like us or guys like me that comes from a fast-paced, we want it now environment, they might not take the time to tell the story because we don't want to take the time to watch it. That's probably more the problem than anything. Because we're instant people. It's on our phones. We want it now. We don't want to wait for a story. We want to see it right here, right now. So that could be, it's just a generational thing. More than a wrestling thing. So,
you know. Tell me about your first match, the first time you came through the curtain. Were you nervous, excited, scared? What is the feeling when you step in front of a crowd for the first time to actually work a match?
To actually work a match was like the great, it was really neat because, you know, we were under mask at the time and we wrestled a guy, you probably know him as Mega. He works up in New York and worked for Red Coast Pro for a while, but it was like me and another guy, I won't say his name, we're under hoods, and then we wrestled him. It was at the Boys and Girls Club. We did like a Friday matinee show just for these kids, and there's like 300 screaming kids, you know, and Jim Kegner's wrestling the whole thing, and it's first time ever I'm taking like real bumps and doing real stuff. And man, it was really neat, but I took like a suplex in a bad spot, my wind got knocked out of me, and Jim's yelling at me, telling me what to do, and it was exciting, and it was neat, and it was fun, but man, it was like working on the fly. It was really just a learning experience rather quickly, but I think that's what I call like my first ever match. But then we got into a program, we had what we called the Green Team. Jim came up with it. It was me, Jason Lee, and Corey Blaze, and so we're the three of us, and they paired us off with the Chick Magnets, Mozart Fontaine, Brian Socha, and Mike Tobin, and they really kind of honed us in on you know, doing certain things and when to do them, and we kind of had a story with those guys and then wrestled a few more people and then went back to them. So we wrestled like four matches in this like program with the Green Team. And that was kind of neat to have a program. It was kind of neat to learn. It was kind of neat to work everybody. So that was like my first like little run in wrestling. So that, you know, that's right up there with like your first match. So it was kind of neat to work with those guys. And I owe so much to them for, you know, just teaching and being so supportive.
Mm-hmm. Talk a little, JJ, about the difficulty in building a character. You are known as the beating heart JJ Cruz, and how difficult is it, though, to find within yourself the right character as you go through your wrestling career?
I probably play like four different characters depending on the day and what's needed. You know, if they need me to be a funny bad guy, well, then I put the hat on and I go out there and be the funny hat guy. If they need me to be a superhero, well, then I'll go be a superhero. If they need me to be the beating heart, you know, the rah-rah good guy, well, then I'll go do that. You know, if they need me to play sympathy character, then I can do that. But, you know, Jim would always say, you have to love your character first before anybody else loves it. If you don't buy into it, nobody else is. So, you had to buy into being a superhero, buy into, you know, being the rah-rah babyface J.J. Cruz, because, you know, even at that time, and even still today, you know, we call myself the beating harp and of the company, and that's a true statement. You know, he's a guy that was building the rings and setting up the arenas and going and getting chairs and getting the guardrails and spending 12 hours there, you know, at Dynamite Championship Wrestling. That was a true statement. There was no character. You know, I believed it, and I still do today. You know what I mean? So, but character-wise, if you're playing something that's not true to you, you know, and it's you up to 1,000 and you turned up, you know, you just have to really zone in and figure out what works and what doesn't work for your character and how to project that out of the ring, over the guardrails, and have it mean something to the fans. Because you can do stuff all day in the ring, and it doesn't register to them, and you're doing it all for nothing. And that's my big thing, you know, have them buy into whatever you're selling, so then they go home with an experience, and they go home and say, wow, that was a good match, that was a good night, and I remember this, and wow, J.D. Cruz is pretty cool. So if I can make them laugh or make them feel bad or make them feel sad, then I can draw some emotion out of them, well, then my character has succeeded.
I have seen you, you're right, work a lot of different styles, especially at least in how you present yourself to the crowd. It's great versatility, and I think that when you work different promotions, that's key. Would you agree?
Oh, yeah, that's definitely key. You might have the same name. That's probably where I went wrong. If I would have changed my name up at different companies, it would have been more marketable. The problem is there's so many companies down there, down south right now in Delaware. I think there's like 7 now altogether, you know, that it's just saturated. So if I work, you know, for DCW and 302 Pro, well then, am I going to draw a crowd of PPW? Probably not. You know what I mean? At this stage in the game, I'm probably not drawing, but I can have good matches. So you kind of lose that. You know, that's the problem. I can work as many characters as I want, but at the end of the day, I'm still J.J. Cruz. You know, so it kind of it hinders you sometimes. You know, if I wrestled somewhere in Pennsylvania, one character, and one in Jersey, and one in Delaware, well, that's pretty cool because then I am branching out. And then when somebody, if I were to ever make it higher up anywhere else and they said, why need you to play this character? Well, then you have the ability to do so. So that's why I try to. And it's fun. If you go out there and have a good time, man, the crowd buys into that. They know when you're having fun and they know when you're phoning it in. So that's a big thing.
Talk a little bit about working on your mic skills and learning how to deliver an effective promo.
Well, when I first went to DCW, I first noticed is like the Bomb Boys and the Corey Castles were always having like promos, and they're always doing in-ring things. So I said, Zach, I said, hey man, you know, I want to do more promos. I need to work on it. I need to be able to talk, and then be able to deliver, and be able to have this ability to do so and get my story across. So he gave me the opportunity at DCW to do that. You know, as I always a pretty good talker. Yeah, you know. But the delivery and your cadence and how you speak and how you slow down for them to register it. And there's a lot to it. You can just ramble on for days at one monotone voice just like this, and it's boring. Or you can be like, hey, how you doing today? Come on out to see DCW, and that sounds better. So there's a lot to it, and then there's a lot to be interesting. I mean, for God's sake, they go on TV now, and they speak for 10, 12 minutes. Can you imagine? Imagine someone done that indie show. You know, imagine me going out there for 12 minutes and talking. They get bored after 3. So you have to know your crowd and know how long you can talk for and how long you can engage them. So and you have to know where you're at on the show in order to, hey, am I second match or am I going out first thing of the night? They want to see wrestling and you're going on a cut of promo. So you really got to know all that dynamics going into it and make it sound right and not stutter and all that. It's a tough deal. You know. So and we're not even on television.
Yeah, I remember a Monday Night Raw about a year ago where Chris Jericho walked from the top of the arena down to the ring and the whole time was cutting a promo. He kind of came through the crowd and I remember calling my son over and saying, Dylan, you have no idea how hard that what he just did in front of 18,000 people on live television, walking down the steps, cutting the promo, getting his point across, like you said, not stuttering, staying in character. People have no idea how difficult that is.
And they're probably not as hard on us like they probably give them bullet points and tell them what they have to say, and they got to either memorize it or not memorize it. You know, you're making movies. It's tough to do. People don't give them enough credit for the ability that they go, oh, that guy can't talk. Well, he probably can. It's just, you know, it's quite difficult. You go out there and try it. You know, and they can't do it.
Exactly.
So I try not to criticize anyone.
No, I understand. And you are admittedly smaller in nature. And
yeah.
Talk a little bit about the challenges of working with certain maybe bigger opponents or certain situations in the ring. Has your size at times made becoming a pro wrestler more difficult?
Definitely. I mean, I wish I was taller, but that ain't in the cards. But, you know, I got enough charisma, enough heart, and I can resonate that to a crowd to get a reaction out of them. You know, when I get in the ring and wrestle, everything that I actually do can be done in a real situation and really work. And that's what I try to pride myself on, is because I am the smaller guy, and I have to be protected. You know, I have to, if I'm in the ring with somebody that's bigger than me, he can actually hurt me, man or woman, by the way. You know, so it might be a work, but that guy might not like me today, and that guy might try to hurt me. And so I'm always on defense mode, and I'm always in control of what I'm doing. So and being smaller, you have to do more. You have to be in protection of yourself. And, you know, you might have to, some guy might try to come after you, might not like you, and you have to put a stop to it. And sometimes that's happened, and it's happened to me, and I put a stop to it, and they don't mess with me anymore. But it's and it's the way you carry yourself, and it's a whole bunch of different things. But for me, it's like, hey, you're just some kid. You're just some. It's always this, hey, you're smaller. You're just some kid, and that always bothered me because, you know, I've worked really hard to be something. And people take a one look at me, and they're like, you're just this. Once they wrestle me, they're like, oh, okay, you're good to go. Let's have another one. And the second match is always better than the first. So it's kind of hindering. But then again, that's on me. I haven't worked many places other than outside Delaware. You know what I mean? So I haven't, you know, taken that maybe next level step for people to be like, oh, he's a recognizable guy. But, you know, here in Delaware I am, but you take me to Jersey or PA, they don't know who that guy is. So.
That leads nicely into my next question. I wanted to talk to you about other territories that you'd be interested in working, perhaps other countries. I know Japan, Mexico, you know, great wrestling traditions. Where else would you like to work, JJ?
Well, I'll be very honest with you, I don't. You know, and I know my goals and what my goals are, and I pretty much hit them. I'm not gonna go to WWE. I'm not gonna go to Florida. I'm not gonna be in ROH. I'm not gonna do any of those things. I got a real solid job here in Delaware. You know, I'm gonna come out with a pension after 30 years and work for the state. And that's what's in the cards for me. I don't go to the gym. I don't work out. You know, and I don't have that drive. And I'm okay accepting that. Some people are, and some people aren't. You know, wrestling is a lifestyle. It's not a lifestyle that I choose fully. I'm in it like 78%. And I know that's probably going to make some of your viewers upset that I admit that out loud, but that's the way it is. So some people will say, well, you're good enough to be there. And I'm like, maybe I am. I just, it's not what I want. I got two kids. I got a good job. This is what I want to do. And this is what makes me happy right now. I don't want to be on the road. I don't want to do those things. And I don't want to take anybody else's spot that really wants it. You know what I mean? If I'm really going to get that opportunity to go do it and I don't really want to be there, and some other guy does, well, then I'm not going to hinder that guy from taking that spot. So do I still want to learn and still coachable and still learn the craft and know what the trends are and know what works? Absolutely. But if someone said, hey, you want to go to Florida and have a tryout? Well, sure. But in the back of my mind, I don't think I can make it all the way through it. So, you know, that's where I'm at in life. And I'm 33. So that's that. I mean, I appreciate it, but it ain't there.
I got to tell you, that, JJ, is one of the most honest answers. I've been doing radio steadily for the last 5-6 years, and that is one of the most honest answers because a lot of wrestlers don't understand their limitations. And as a result, you look at them, they don't put the time in at the gym, they don't work on their promo skills, they don't have the moveset, they don't know how to tell a story in the ring, and yet they still think they're going to go to WWE.
Yeah, they're going to be in Florida someday,
I really appreciate, but I do want to say this, because I've seen you work a lot of times.
Yeah.
No matter what you think your career goals are or where you are, every time I've seen you come through the curtain, you give the crowd 110%. So just if you think perhaps that, you know, you don't see yourself put your heart and soul into the future of this as your only direction, I just want the listeners to know I've seen you work, and every time you are in the ring, you give 110%. I always appreciate that.
Thank you. And what I probably like to do now is, I go down to Spine Busters training school, and that's 302 Pro. Pro Wrestling runs it. I go down there about once a week, and maybe every other week. Then I work with those guys and try to hang with all the young guys, Joe Kurz, and all those guys are phenomenal. They're going to be great workers, and they got a drive that is unstoppable. You know, especially Travis Banks and Joe Kerr. Those two guys right now are just, they got a drive like no other. And it's great to see that. And then when someone comes in that's brand new, and especially like, you know, Ty Austin, who I get to work with, and he's got a lot of moves, and he can do a lot of things. I like working with those guys. So I think it's phenomenal that those guys work so hard, and then I get to kind of give my two cents and then help them do a few things. And then when they use it and it works, that's what I get excited about. And that's why I get some gratitude. I'm like, man, that's cool. We taught that guy how to do a hip toss today, and he landed perfectly. And I'm like, I jump up and I hit the mat, and I'm all excited about it, you know. So that's some gratification I have, you know, about once a week or so. So that's good that I get the opportunity to do that.
Talk a little bit about the importance of championships and titles. I know as fans, we really put a value on them. You've held titles before. Do they mean anything to the performers other than, you know, the promotion has some confidence in you, but at the end of the day, you really just want to give a good match to the fans. How important are titles?
Well, to me, they're very important. You're going to ask 10 workers and get 10 different answers. You know what I mean? Oh, they're just a strip from that I got to carry. Well, to me, it doesn't mean that. To me, it means you are the best in the company because you worked hard to get it. It was a goal I set to be no limits champ for over a year. You know what I mean? It was my goal to be a heavyweight champion in DCW, even though they said you're too small to do it. You know, so that was always my intent. And to me, that meant you were the best and that you got the opportunity to go out there on last and try to carry the company. And that meant a lot to me. Now you can ask 15 other guys, they're like, ah, it's nothing. But to me, it was something. And it still is. So, you know, I got to be a, you know, Mid-Atlantic champion. I still call myself a former Mid-Atlantic champion. I held it for 2 months in ECWA. But I got to work Ace Darling. You know what I mean? So there was an opportunity there. It's on Wikipedia, for crying out loud. I mean, that's cool stuff. And to me, it means a whole lot. But to other guys, probably not.
Can you share with us some of your favorite opponents or favorite matches from your career?
Oh, man, it's hard to remember a lot of them. Off the top, when I was younger, working with the Chick Magnets was phenomenal. We just learned so much working with those guys and being able to go out there and work. And off the, you know, and of course I can't mention anything about mentioning Timothy Richards. So we grew up together, we trained together, we've had matches on, you know, all around the tri-state area in Jersey and everywhere else, and we had some knockdown drag out fights and had some really good matches. And along with that was the KO Storm. I mean, I never hit somebody so hard as I hit KO Storm, and we had some wars in the ring. Same thing with Corey Castle. I mean, just absolutely brutal type matches and really going out there and just showcasing your skills, you know. So those, it's like KO and guys like that just get to work. Those are some of my favorite matches. And working Mark Harrow in a ladder match, that was a great time, great fun. And, you know, working Blaine, and there's just so many guys I had the opportunity to work. Yeah, it's just hard to pick, like, oh, that's my absolute favorite match. Probably my absolute favorite match hasn't happened yet, you know? Because once I get done and everything works out great, you're like, man, that was phenomenal. You're like taking a hit, man. It's like a drug. You're like, oh, that was great. You can do anything to get it back and go out there and perform again and to, you know, be out there in front of the crowd and have everything go right and you have them in your palm of your hand. You know, it's hard to describe. You know, I got to mention, too, Andrew Riker. I wrestled him when I was in ECWA, and he probably gave me one of the probably top three matches ever, you know, for me. So he's right up there with everybody else. I don't want to forget him because, you know, he might listen. So, you know, to pick a top favorite, that's a pretty hard task to live up to.
Now, I've worked with you on shows where you are running the audio and the technical side of the evening. Talk how you got involved with running the audio and that side of the wrestling business, and do you get some gratification out of that just like you do in the ring?
I do. Mark Harrow got married, and he was like, hey, can you play some music? And he had some makeshift. We had some makeshift equipment at the time. We kind of put it together, and I kind of impromptu, you know, DJed his wedding. And while we're on Facebook, you know, my wife puts up there, hey, JJ Cruz getting his DJ on, and then a lady said, hey, I need a DJ, and I was like, I'll do it. And that's how it kind of started. So I started, like, doing DJing, and with the help of David Klein, you know, kind of helping me, you know, start to DJ. And then I did a few weddings, I've done a few graduation parties, but, you know, David Klein's the main guy for PPW as far as sound goes, but he couldn't make a few, so they asked me to do it. and I stepped in and just filled in. I get gratification out of it because I want to make sure the show moves along. You know, I know fans don't want to sit there for 3.5-4 hours on any show. That's a long night. So if I can kind of, you know, hustle things along and go, hey, guys, can you take a minute off your off this match so we can kind of get going? Or can we take, you know, 5 minutes off this intermission so we can get moving here? So, you know, so things can get moving quickly and being right. And I, you know, from a technical standpoint, you want to make sure all the music's right and the bell goes off and you're speaking at the right time and the microphones are good and you're helping the show in a big way. So you really are a big part of it, even though you're not working. So it's behind the scenes type stuff for me, and I really do enjoy it. You know, plus you get paid, you don't have to get beat up. So it kind of works both ways.
Yes, and I learned as the ring announcer that we all really do work in concert together. All of us are part of the show. Even when I would sit by the side of the ring, I didn't, when I first started this, realize people are still watching me. And all the time when I'm out there. I mean, so it's something that I had to learn, I think, to get better at what I do and to rely on the sound, to rely on the booker, to rely on the talent, the referee. We all have to work together to put together a show that people get their money's worth. JJ, it's been great having you on OWW Radio. Before we let you go tonight, can you tell folks where they can find you on social media? Do you use Twitter? Do you use Facebook to interact with your fans?
Well, my other couple other characters, you know, you can find them if you Google my cousin, Courageous Cruz. He's out there. You know, he's on the Twitter through Right Coast Pro as well. But I'm just on the Facebook. That's it. JJ Cruz on Facebook. That's all I do. I can't keep up with all the social media, Instagrams and all. I just don't follow it. If you want to hit me up, that's where to find me all the time. Number hasn't changed in 10, 15 years. It's easy to find me. So, that's it. Yeah. I mean, I probably, you know, the guys that go out there and they work everywhere and do everything they can and use those social media to their advantage, have at it. I think it's a great, great platform. I just don't, I'm just not on it. So if you want to find me, just Google JJ Cruz. And I'm sure you'll find something.
You got it. Thank you so much for being on OWW Radio this evening, JJ. Great catching up with you, and I look forward to working with you again soon.
All right. We'll see you in a few weeks, probably, somewhere.
Okay. Take care. So,
all right. Thanks, Dave. I'll see you. Bye-bye.
Bye. Don't forget to check out the OWW website at onlineworldofwrestling.com for the latest news, analysis, and updates from the world of professional wrestling. While you're there, you can also catch up on past episodes of OWW Radio. Email us at radio@onlineworldofwrestling.com to submit topics or questions you would like us to discuss on an upcoming broadcast. Also, make sure to follow us on Twitter at OWWCOM to get all program updates and announcements. We'll also be posting directly to the official OWW Facebook homepage. Till next time, I am David. Thanks again to JJ Cruz for today's interview. We hope you enjoyed the show, and we'll be back soon with another edition of OWW Radio. All right, well that's okay.